Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, this is the Autosport Podcast. ...2024 marked the first time the Formula One grid started and ended with all the drivers staying with their teams going into the new season. However, early this year, the Formula One world was shocked as Lewis Hamilton announced his move from Mercedes to Ferrari, starting the silly season early. And with several drivers out of contract at the end of this year, including Carlos Sainz, we're going to have a look at the driver's market and see who might move to where. Well, I'm Bryn Lucas, and joining me, I'm delighted to have Alex Kalinorkas, who's written an article on Autosport.com about this very topic. Now, Alex, let's kick it off, shall we? It is looking like it's going to be the silliest of silly seasons.
Yeah, hi Bryn, hi listeners, hi viewers. I always like the silly season moniker, because obviously that's addressing the speculation and the rumours that we love that swirl around Formula One. But of course, actually, very, very, very serious business, which we illustrated on the cover of Autosport magazine with some nice squiggles, which I thought was particularly good. Although, on reflection, this one definitely shouldn't be just going off into the ether. It should be pointing directly at this man who he's replacing, Lewis Hamilton, going to replace Carlos Sainz at Ferrari. But yeah, very serious business in the end, driver contracts. And at the same time, you know, it's what interests people, that sort of expectation of change coming in the future, potentially that the change might lead to a better Formula One or more interesting Formula One, unless, of course, you're a Red Bull or a Max Verstappen fan. So yeah, very, very convoluted. Lots of twists and turns still to come, I'm sure. But yeah, let's run down what we know as of right now.
Absolutely. Now, I hinted at the top that you've written an article. It's a very, very in-depth article, and I urge our viewers, our listeners, to go and check that out once you've finished listening or watching to this episode. Now, we'll start with what happened at the beginning of the year. Lewis Hamilton surprising us all, really, with this shock move, in inverted commas, I suppose, to Ferrari. And that, we're not going to really talk about the teams that are retaining or that we know their lineup. So we know Ferrari, we're just going to say Charles Leclerc, Lewis Hamilton 2025. But that move from Lewis Hamilton really did throw the cat among the pigeons, because there's now a seat at Mercedes, there's Carlos Sainz leaving Ferrari. So where should we start? Let's start with Red Bull. Why not? Because Red Bull is where it all seems to always start and end, doesn't it, at the moment. So we'll start with Max Verstappen. We know he's staying, but his teammate Sergio Perez, there's a big question mark over him.
Well, is Max Verstappen staying, Bryn? That is, if anything, the more interesting element of the Red Bull discussion. And yeah, as you say, Ferrari being locked down in terms of 25, that was expected, considering Charles Leclerc got contract extensions, Carlos Sainz was in talks about staying there. But ultimately, the Lewis Hamilton bombshell just changed everything, didn't it? So yeah, Mercedes having a seat open, how rare is it that a top team suddenly has to change its plans at the last minute? But even more surprisingly was what happened at Red Bull at the start of the year. The Christian Horner scandal, we now sort of term it also the Red Bull management war, because we know that there's lots of internal power struggle going on within Red Bull. That includes the wider organisation and sort of the big energy drinks. It's almost sort of OEM level, isn't it? The wider Red Bull energy drink group. But there we go. Yeah, that potentially, the outcome of that uncertainty there, while it has cooled and cooled significantly since the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, when it was really sort of at a kind of fever pitch, that could drastically alter the sort of the fate of Red Bull and the future of its driver lineup heading into 2025. Because let's face it, you know, yeah, Christian Horner, when I was last in the paddock in the Japanese Grand Prix, very much seeming more confident in his position and in various other positions. For example, the future of Max Verstappen. You know, he's still not as public facing as we've seen him in previous years, but you know, at the Chinese Grand Prix, when the questions put to him about what Toto Wolff is saying about Max Verstappen, seems to get under Horner's skin quite quickly there. So yeah, it's definitely still not 100% certain. Again, the messages, the reports coming out of the Shanghai paddock is that Max Verstappen is pretty much keen on staying. Like, he doesn't want to leave. That said, we've still got the FIA probe into the Horner matter, and of course the appeal into the decision to clear him in that scandal. Those outcomes are still to come. It was put to me in Japan that this is basically what we're in right now, is the calm between two storms, that there is much more to come on this front. And potentially that's what could lead to Max Verstappen going. It is a more remote chance, but there is still a slim possibility that he might end up at a different team in 2025. And of course, yeah, that would mean, you know, the contract that he signed, that, you know, very, very long contract, keeping him there until 2028, that would have to be essentially ripped up. But yeah, the other seat, what happens to Sergio Perez? That is what we were all expecting to be talking about throughout 2024, particularly this early stage of the season. Daniel Ricciardo back at RB, that was there now for Tori last year. Would he sort of, you know, basically stake a claim, a commanding, decisive claim by being excellent in the middle order, while Perez yet again sort of flailed around, was well off the pace in Verstappen's wake? Well, the opposite has happened in pretty much all of what I've just said there. Ricciardo has been very, very disappointing. I mean, now really the question is, does he deserve a place in Formula One for much longer? We'll come to that later on. But with Sergio Perez, yeah, he is doing better. Of course, he's got those second places behind all of Max Verstappen's victories. But he left himself open yet again in Australia to being beaten, picking up damage in the pack as he tried to come back from a poor qualifying and a penalty in qualifying. So again, he showed that when Red Bull does need him to pick up the pieces, he failed to do that. That said, he's got those second places when it has won this season. So essentially, Red Bull's like, great, he's doing what we want, mostly. He's doing it well. But they don't know if he's going to keep this form up. So what Red Bull wants to do is wait potentially until the summer to see if he's still doing that. And I think ideally it would like to offer him a new contract covering 2025. A lot of the other players in the driver market, they want their decision made much sooner.
It's a very, very convoluted story at Red Bull, isn't it, at the moment? Because it all depends on what goes on with Max Verstappen. That all depends, it seems to be, on what happens with the outcome of this investigation, which we won't know for, I don't know how long. I mean, you probably know more than me of when the outcome of that is likely to happen. But that knock-on effect for Max Verstappen is what is the big question mark over Sergio Perez. Because if you're Christian Horner, or if you're the hierarchy at Red Bull, and you've got Max Verstappen staying on, is it better the devil you know, and keep Perez in that seat as a decent number two that's pretty much this season doing what he needs to do there? Or do you look elsewhere, irrespective of what Max does?
Well, I think it seems that with Ricciardo underperforming, where else is Red Bull going to look in terms of its own drivers? You'd have to say it can only really look now to Yuki Tsunoda, who, as a Honda-linked, Honda-backed, formerly driver, he has no way of getting to Aston Martin, because as many people will understand and know and be frustrated with, Aston Martin isn't going to get rid of the owner's son, and it's just tied Fernando Alonso to a new deal. So Tsunoda, when that team gets a Honda Works deal in 2026, he can't go there for that season. So Red Bull could look at him. But yeah, if Verstappen goes, of course, that will create a lot of uncertainty. But I think Red Bull did look at every element. I mean, we know they talked to Fernando Alonso, the suggestion, which Alonso sort of alluded to, then immediately shut down, which could also apply to Mercedes, is that they were sort of offering short-term contracts or short-term deals, that he wanted a long-term thing. But the other, of course, major talking point with Red Bull is Carlos Sainz. Now, effectively, Helmut Marko, revealing in an interview ahead of the Chinese Grand Prix, he's claiming, and of course he's the source on this, we haven't heard it from Science itself, nor in my case from Science's camp, is that Audi, which of course is taking over the Sauber team, has offered, in Marko's words, a very lucrative offer that Red Bull can't match, which sounds slightly disingenuous considering just how much money the Red Bull group can bring in with those small but very potent cans of energy drink and all its big marketing activations around the world. But yeah, that's the situation as it stands. Red Bull seems like it would be open to Science joining, whether that's as a replacement to Perez or whether it's as a replacement to Verstappen, more likely the Perez scenario as things stand. But it's claiming that they're not willing to sort of pay over the odds. Audi potentially is, you know, he's a very highly rated race winner, so it would be getting something massively significant if it does want to stump up the money. So yeah, it's not quite as simple as Red Bull wants it to be, and it's also not as simple in a different way as the Sciences would like it.
If we keep the link then between the Red Bull drivers and another team, the next team I'm going to bring up is Mercedes, because they've got an empty seat, as we know, with Hamilton leaving, leaves George Russell there. He's still got his contract for a little bit longer, to the end of 2025. There seems to be quite a lot of names associated with that seat. Is Carlos Sainz one of those names, though?
Carlos Sainz certainly is one of those names. There are also others. I mean, I think Esteban Ocon, Pierre Gasly, plenty of available drivers, as you said at the start, Bryn. Esteban Ocon is saying, he's basically waving a flag saying, look, I'm still a Mercedes junior, his exact words. So I think, you know, the problem for all of them is that basically, if there was to be a driver switch, like an existing F1 driver going to Mercedes alongside George Russell, they would only be offered a one-year contract, because Mercedes' preference, whether this happens for 2025 or 26 or 27, is that its highly rated young driver, Andrea Kimi Antonelli, is promoted into Formula One. And ideally, Mercedes wants to do that for next year. And again, this is a team that's happy to wait for make its decision. Antonelli's racing in Formula 2 with Prema Racing. He's very highly rated, but so far things haven't come together. It's a championship that, you know, there can, 1 minute you can look like a zero, 1 minute you can look like a hero, but it hasn't had that momentum that we've seen, for example, in recent years, drivers like Oscar Piastri, George Russell, or Charles Leclerc. Now, Russell's season, of course, was very up and down, but he did ultimately win it. But that's what Mercedes wants to do, because it doesn't want to miss out on losing another highly rated junior like it did with Max Verstappen going to Red Bull. So it wants to wait. And at the same time, if it does wait, it can say, well, OK, actually, maybe he's not ready for the works team. We can either keep him in Formula 2 for another year if he doesn't win the title, or we can place him, say, at a customer team, a closely tied customer team like Williams. Now, again, a suggestion made to me in the paddock in Suzuka is that Williams actually be open to that. It's keeping its cards quite close to its chest, other than very much saying Alex Albon is off limits for 2025. But I think you'd have to say Williams would be open to having Antonelli, and it would gain from doing so, because he's so highly rated. Potentially you add in then the potential for other factors like engine discounts from Mercedes, its customer partner. So, you know, there is the option of that happening for both Williams and for Mercedes. That then you get into the, well, then who goes to Mercedes for the short term? Let's say it's Ocon. He's at an Alpine team that's badly underperforming. I honestly can't see it attracting any other drivers other than anyone sort of more desperate to prolong their career at this stage. Ocon would conceivably perhaps think, OK, I'll go to Mercedes, I'll be a works driver. If I beat George Russell when his contract is up, and we know that's going to be coming sooner rather than later in terms of the greater long term, why not pick me and put Antonelli in the other car? Or just be so good, and Antonelli continues to not progress as Mercedes hopes or wants, then at least you're in the fight. So it's, okay, I'll accept the short term in the hope that it turns into something else. You know, hey, who hasn't had, you know, job potential that or career opportunities where you take something in the short term, thinking about it maybe developing long term, and if it doesn't work out that way, then you try and go in a different direction. So yeah, Mercedes happy to wait. That presents opportunity for other drivers.
One name that we haven't really touched upon with Mercedes, Max Verstappen. How long will Mercedes wait before they make a decision, even trying to entice Max? Or is this more of Toto Wolff just, you know, stirring the pot while he can and trying to get under the skin of Christian Horner?
Well, until we know the outcome of what's going to happen at Red Bull and whether Verstappen is available, that's very much what I would assume it is. It's, you know, it's, let's face it, it's the cliche, it's the Sun Tzu, the art of war. It's just keeping pressure on your rival. It also has a very handy element for Mercedes in, if you keep the media focused on what's happening at Red Bull and maybe Max Verstappen moving, you deflect from the fact that yet another Mercedes F1 car in the ground effect era is pretty terrible and is certainly not, you know, winning races. So there's so many elements that are beneficial for Mercedes to talk about the potential of bringing Max Verstappen. To be fair to Toto Wolff, if that is what he's trying to do, he's very openly and honestly saying, look, if I was Max Verstappen, I wouldn't come here. I'd stay at Red Bull. But it's, you can see why it's handy for him for that conversation to being had. From Verstappen's point of view, yeah, if things don't go the way that he and his camp, his father, his family don't like at Red Bull, joining Mercedes is a viable option. Okay, you might lose the 2025 world title because the 2025 Mercedes unlikely to close the gap to Red Bull in one off season. But if their engine is as amazing in 2026 as the new engines were in 2014, then you might win four or five more world titles on from going on then. So that's the sort of, that's the logic behind it all. Carlos Sainz, to be fair, you know, that's factoring into his decision as well. It's not just, you know, who might offer me the most money. I think that is a factor in what Sainz is considering, because he said as much in Shanghai. He said, look, it's not just about whether a car can win. It's got to be the right offer. It's got to be teams offering me other things. And that could be an 8-year contract. That could be my Formula One future sorted, even if it's sort of less money overall. Do you see what I mean? Rather than a short-term deal. But what I'm getting at here is that essentially, you know, what Sainz was saying was that when it comes to the engine consideration for 2026, he's saying it's a coin toss. We just don't know. Like Red Bull and Honda, or you consider how Red Bull and Honda came together and did so well. Either one of them, the one producing its own powertrain for 2026 in conjunction with Ford, or Honda itself, now a Aston Martin, they could be like overtaking Mercedes, Ferrari as well. Let's not forget they produce their own engines. Will this be another Lewis Hamilton, you know, great move of his career to go just as Ferrari really hit on the up in 2026? So that element of it is so uncertain right now, but you can't discount that from what drivers, including Verstappen, are going to be thinking.
Be an amazing legacy for Lewis Hamilton, wouldn't it, to go to someone like Ferrari, win a title with Ferrari, win titles with three different teams, get your eighth world title and then bow out gracefully. That would be pretty impressive. One name that was mentioned in your article, Alex, that we haven't really mentioned, and I don't know how much I can look at it and think, okay, I can see him coming back, and that's Vettel. That was a real curveball when I read your article. I was like, Vettel? I must spout out my coffee.
Yeah, again, it suits a lot of camps to have his name up there. He's got an energy drink to promote at the moment. There's also very considerable discussions about him joining Porsche in the World Endurance Championship, potentially as soon as Le Mans this year, if everybody's getting very excited, and wouldn't be good to see after his recent test there. It also suits, because of course that was in relation to him going to Mercedes as a replacement for Lewis Hamilton. I noted there was a glint in Lewis Hamilton's eye when he got asked about this at Suzuka, and basically he was like, I don't really care who they put in, as long as they're, you know, they've got the right ethos, they've got the right message. They're not going to be a driver that really disrupts a team. The subtext being Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen. You know, and the fact that him and Vettel are friends obviously adds into that. But you know, if you even just peel things apart and just ask the question behind the scenes just a little bit, Vettel isn't an option at all for Mercedes. It's just, again, it's convenient to have his name in the conversation. I think from a nostalgia point of view, it'd be fantastic for him to come back. He's obviously a very popular driver, really enjoying the way he approached the last years of his career to highlight other issues. I thought that was tremendously interesting, but it's really a non-starter. I don't see how, you know, from a prestige point of view in the short term, maybe it would benefit Mercedes, but, you know, there are other better drivers out there for Mercedes, and also it really has no interest in Vettel beyond talking about him to again deflect from its wider issues with its car.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it would be lovely to see him back, but I think nostalgia-wise, it'd be lovely to see him back. Just have him around the paddock, you know, just have him there on camera every now and then, you know, saying something interesting and exciting and thought-provoking. That's what we need from Vettel. Now, I've got a feeling we're going to mention Antonelli again in just a bit. Before we do, let's jump to a totally different team from the ones we've mentioned so far, which are more the front runners. Let's go to Sauber. And you have mentioned Sauber already in relation to Carlos Sainz, because Audi taking over the stewardship of that team from 2026, but you know, who knows what's going to happen there with the deal they've got. But they want to come into Formula One and they want to come in and make a mark straight away. It doesn't look like they're trying to build slowly.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's been interesting to hear again Helmut Marko, you know, sort of driver market stuff. He obviously considers this very much his domain. He was saying at Suzuka, look, the pressure that Audi's been applying at the driver market, that's another factor in why things have kicked off so early. Because, and then as he expanded upon, heading towards trying to this supposed lucrative offer to Carlos Sainz. I mean, you can totally see it from Audi's point of view. Why would you not want to get your 2026 driver lineup sorted and in place for 2025? Because then if you go to two new drivers replacing Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu, you get them settled in and aligned with what the team is and how it works and everything. But also, if you bring in Carlos Sainz and Ferrari, somebody else from another experience of another power unit, you've got their insight into how things should be performing when it comes to Audi building its own engine. So that's obviously beneficial to get other drivers in as early as possible. There are sort of red flags, for want of a better word, with any driver, including Sainz, wanting to or considering going to Audi. Look, yeah, it's a massively prestigious brand. What it did with its success in Le Mans, the World Endurance Championship, the impact that made on its car sales, absolutely tremendous. But Formula One is really not that far on from the massive failure of the Toyota project, where it came in with massive amount of money and achieved absolutely nothing. There's now a cost cap era that makes it, even a manufacturer as massive as Mercedes can't catch up with Red Bull, because the nuances of this ground effect means that unless you got your concept right immediately, you're always massively playing catch up. So a driver going there may never win. That said, they could come in with the best engine in 2026 and blow the field away. That's equally as possible. Of course it is. The other, there's also sort of more alarm bells coming just from Sauber this season. It invested in its pit equipment. It changed its procedures, got it badly wrong and ruined basically the start of its year. Its front wings, twice now it seems, on the curb for Zhou Guanyu in Australia, and then as he overtook Kevin Magnussen towards the end of the Chinese Grand Prix, erroneously called on the international coverage that Sky puts out that he hit Magnussen, wasn't anywhere near him as he pulled out from the slipstream and into the dirty air effect, the wing came apart. These things shouldn't be happening at a well-run Formula One organisation. Now, of course, Audi coming, or extra changes that Audi may bring may change that, but Audi's, you know, basically been running Sauber from behind the scenes, Andreas Seidel as the CEO, the boss there, for quite a while. So, yeah, it's an interesting situation to consider with Audi right now, and the risks that it poses. Also, you know, at the same time, let's not be overwhelmingly negative. It's good to have another engine manufacturer involved, good to have another massive OEM involved. You know, Audi has succeeded in every category. It did very well at Le Mans, as I've said. It did well in Formula E, just sort of fleetingly and not as well as it should have done because of the various issues when it was a manufacturer in the early stages of that electric category. But anyway, yeah, with Audi, it's not just Sainz that this sort of feeds into. The understanding is that Nico Hülkenberg is very much on Audi's radar, and he's already said Audi's on his radar. So it could lead to big change elsewhere. Equally, we saw how well Zhou Guanyu was received at the Chinese Grand Prix in a car that's where it's going to finish for the foreseeable. So, you know, yeah, he's not the most highly rated driver, but he has a real value in terms of Audi wanting to sell more electric vehicles or more vehicles overall in China to that market. So it's not just sort of as simple as saying Audi comes in, picks the two best available drivers and there you go. But as I said, it's not a given that going to Audi would mean Formula One success. It might, however, give what a lot of racing drivers really do want: long-term, you know, stability, the paycheck coming in, a healthy paycheck from a big manufacturer. So you can equally see, as much as it might be a risk, it's also potentially a big benefit.
Before we move on to another team, can we look at this, or should we look at this driver market for 2024 and see lots and lots of multiple year deals being put in place by the end of 2024. We won't see many 1 year or one plus ones. Do you think we'll see 2+ years coming in? What's your gut instinct?
I think for the established drivers, yeah, there will be long-term deals. Like I said, so let's say if Science goes to Audi, why would you do a short-term deal there if you know that you're already sort of impacting your short-term future? So that at least be for a couple of years. Hülkenberg's got to be pushing for a similar thing. Yeah, the same as we know with Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari and Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin. You know, basically it's they're locked in for the coming years, the same as Charles Leclerc. But yeah, that said, there's a potential for, if you know, Sergio Perez gets a renewal at Red Bull, you've got to think that would just be a 1 year deal. Effectively, it always is, because as we know, it can be replaced at any point. So I think it'd be a nice, or well, depends on your perspective. From a fan and a media point of view, we like to see change. That would be a nice situation, or a nice mix of long-term and short-term. But from the driver's point of view, they all want long-term gigs. So a short-term deal is being handed out wouldn't necessarily suit everyone in Formula One.
No, absolutely. Pierre Gasly then and Esteban Ocon. You've mentioned Alpine already to a degree. These two drivers, both contracts up at the end of this season. You've mentioned where one of them could go potentially, but it's tricky, isn't it, Alpine? Because it's a team that's not really helping to improve a driver's own stock because of the results they're unable to get during the Grand Prix weekend.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Alpine, because yeah, just the full force of the team's got to be going on getting the car, just making it quicker, making it competitive. It's a pretty shocking situation to find itself in. I think the team would ideally like stability. I think, you know, yeah, they do seem to have a bit of a knack for getting close to each other, as we saw in China. I mean, that happened with Ocon and Fernando Alonso in years previously. So it's not something that Alpine are unfamiliar with. Their two teammates, you know, running each other very, very hard and very, very close. But I think Gasly and Ocon continuing at Alpine, I don't, other than the lack of competitiveness in the car, it's still, you know, the Renault backing, the manufacturer links there. You know, Alpine as a brand, obviously reasonably exciting from a sort of sports star perspective. But yeah, Ocon's Mercedes links complicate that, and Gasly equally, if you're his management, as we know they are, they're getting around to everybody who's got availability and saying, look, he's still here, he's still a race winner, he's still got potential.
Yeah, we'll fire through some more teams as well, because I say there's quite a lot of unknowns at this stage. Next one we'll look at is Williams. We mentioned Alex Albon signed to the end of 2025, potentially Red Bull material for 2026. But what about his teammate? Let's talk about Logan Sargeant and whether or not we'll even see him in Formula One in 2025.
Yeah, I think what happened in Australia and him being benched for Alex Albon having destroyed the other car, it's a pretty clear indication. I mean, everybody knows this. This is not, you know, brand new analysis. But Williams has no confidence in him, and obviously does not see him being part of a long-term future. Now, obviously, it's essentially American-owned. If that was to be tied to some, you know, brand new massive blue chips US sponsor coming in and saying we must have an American driver, the fact that he's there and can provide continuity would work massively in his favour. But really, let's face it, at this point the paddock is not expecting Logan Sargeant to be continuing at Williams. And honestly, he's had a good shake at it now, and he hasn't shown, I think, that he's F1 worthy.
It's tough for him, but it's the nature of the beast, isn't it? We've seen bigger names fall, haven't we, within Formula One over the years. Let's move to another team then, an RB. You mentioned Daniel Ricciardo pretty early on, actually, about there was a seat at Red Bull, and he seems to be doing everything he can to not be having that seat. But if you look at Daniel Ricciardo and his teammate, Yuki Tsunoda, they've also got Liam Lawson very much waiting in the wings, haven't they, from a very strong showing last season when Daniel Ricciardo was injured.
They certainly do, and there's been rumours flying about that potentially as soon as the Miami rounds, Red Bull were going to say, Ricciardo, if your performance doesn't pick up, we'll replace you with Liam Lawson. Now, that was always said to be wide of the mark, because if you've attracted, you know, Cash App and Visa on the strength of Ricciardo's personality basically alone, why would you get rid of him before at least the first US race? I mean, I think that basically ties him to RB at least until the end of the season. But yeah, we know Helmut Marko massively rates Liam Lawson. And I think ultimately, although Christian Horner, you could see that very clearly in Drive to Survive, wants Daniel Ricciardo back at Red Bull, he's just so far showing that, you know, he's not good enough. Now, he got a chassis change at the Chinese Grand Prix. He did say that was better. He was ahead of Yuki Tsunoda in both qualifying sessions. You know, where the only chance really where RB is able to shine, or any of those bottom five teams, because of how congested it is for the top five teams in the point scoring. Then obviously Ricciardo taken out of the Grand Prix. So, yeah, it did very difficult for him to show what he's going to do, but it feels, considering he's underwhelmed, more likely that Lawson would be returning and you'd keep Tsunoda, who's delivering. Because the other factor in, yeah, Ricciardo was showing better in Shanghai. He himself, to be fair to his credit, stood up and said, look, I'm always pretty handy around here. You know, he's a race winner there. So was it a sort of circuit-specific revival? But yeah, Red Bull not without options for who to put at RB if it does want to get rid of Ricciardo. But equally, don't underestimate the value of his brand, of his personality, in terms of doing what Red Bull want with its major, and these are major blue chip US sponsors at that team. So it could be that they say, well, Tsunoda, you've had your time, you've been good enough, but there's business reasons for keeping Ricciardo around, and we want Liam Lawson as a change to come in alongside you. It would be harsh considering the last few races, but equally there's been many other occasions where Tsunoda hasn't seemed to sort of, hasn't got the temperament, maybe just hasn't got the consistency to cut it at the top level in Formula One. As I said, that could equally cut the other way, and he might earn a shock Red Bull promotion if it was left with potentially a lack of other options. But yeah, very interesting, as ever, really, at that team, I think, to keep an eye on what happens with the drivers coming up.
Yeah, Daniel Ricciardo, as you allude to there, he's a very, very good marketable commodity, isn't he? He's very well loved away from Formula One as well, particularly with the fame he got in Drive to Survive as well. It seemed to really, really help brand Ricciardo, that's for sure. We've got two more teams to talk about. One I'm going to leave to the end because it's got a big question mark hanging over it, which I want to tease out of you in just a few minutes. But before I do Haas, we've already spoken about Haas as well. Haas is a team that over the years have tried this two rookies in the same season. Didn't work particularly well for them. They went back to the old hats, should we call them, in the nicest possible sense. And they're both delivering quite well this season, aren't they? So what about Haas and what they're going to do? I know we've already mentioned a certain driver that could step in, who's a teammate of another driver in Formula 2 at Prema Racing. But what about Haas and their two drivers?
Yeah, I think if you're referring to Antonelli there, Bryn, I'm not sure he's the sort of the first Behrman name you think of when it comes to Haas. I think he'd be heading to Williams if he's heading anywhere else other than Mercedes. But yeah, Ollie Behrman, did step in for Carlos Sainz, but and was already set to be a big part of Haas's 2024 because he was, you know, he's going to be doing those six FP1 outings, and that was really seen as a sort of really a full shakedown of whether he's cut out to make it in Formula One. And he showed in Jeddah on that one-off appearance that he can do the job in terms of bringing the points in. That car, it has to be said, did have the pace to be on the podium, but he was dropped in at the last minute, had no practice. Let's not be too harsh on him. Sorry, he had that FP3 appearance. But anyway, yeah, I think it's much more likely to see Ollie Behrman coming in for Haas, or perhaps even just as likely to see him coming in at Haas than, you know, when we compare the Antonelli promotion as their Prema teammates in Formula 2. Haas loves him. Haas, you know, in Mexico, basically, we're just like, yeah, this guy's come from Ferrari, from their academy. He's switched on. He's very technically sound. He's very likable and obviously very talented. And actually, again, just on the Antonelli front, Behrman racing in Jeddah, really, Mercedes were quite really chuffed about that because they were like, well, hang on a minute. We can now see just how good the guy that our guy is racing against is. You know, this is what we might get, and even more if we were to do what we want to do, which is promote Antonelli for 25 or the coming years. So, yeah, some change is expected at Haas. Who's it going to be in place of? If Hülkenberg's off to Audi, well, there's your open slot. Kevin Magnussen, he's doing better, I think. He's not still had the sort of consistent Hülkenberg shining moments like in qualifying we saw in 2023. And then you've got those awful moments like hitting Tsunoda, basically taking him out of the race, you know, the rear of the car getting away from Magnussen and into Tsunoda and sending him off in the Chinese Grand Prix. So, yeah, that's the sort of question mark. Is the end coming for Magnussen? You know, likeable character, but again, had multiple chances in Formula One. When Haas potentially have exciting, you know, fresh faces out there, other opportunities for them.
So Behrman could go to Haas. Antonelli, his Prema teammate, could be at Williams, could be at Mercedes in 2025. We just don't know. One more team then to quickly tick off, and that is Aston Martin and Fernando Alonso. Well, we know what he did just a fairly recently, in fact, where he signed a contract taking him out of the gene pool for a while for the exchanges. He's there at Aston Martin, Lance Stroll on this rolling contract, and as you hinted earlier on, it's unlikely that the owner's son is going to lose his drive or his position in the team. But is there a possibility that Aston Martin might look to refresh it? How long can you just live off of daddy's money?
Well, I think as long as they want that to happen. I mean, well, he's probably always going to be living off daddy's money considering that situation. But anyway, it's interesting. You know, I've said on other things we've done, the GP Racing podcast we do, Flat Chat. I remember being in the Las Vegas at the Las Vegas race last year in the Aston Martin Hospitality at a Mike Crack media roundtable where, you know, we're asking lots of questions about what happened for Aston in that race, lots of season review, insight we're after as well. And there's sort of raucous laughter coming from another table behind. And multiple times you're sort of like, Mike, are you not going to ask someone to step in and tell them to keep the noise down? What's going on? Turned around, it's Lance Stroll and his mates. They're having a whale of a time. And of course, my Stroll's not going to go over and basically shush the owner's son. You know, it just shows to you that Lance Stroll really does enjoy Formula One, because often when he faces the media and when he's on the team radio, really sounds like he doesn't enjoy it. But two things can happen. You know, you can be really enjoying one sense of one thing and not the other. And, you know, you deliberately mask one side of it to keep hold of what you're doing in the other side. But, you know, everybody, the vast majority of people on the outside can see that that's a one-car team, effectively. And what happened in the Chinese Grand Prix with him going into the back of Ricciardo, yeah, I know it was a scenario where there were sort of mitigating factors, but everybody else got it stopped and you really didn't, Lance. So, yeah, it's just there's going to be a moment where Aston has to make the call or has to, you know, present the case to Lawrence Stroll. But we know he really wants his son and believes his son can be world champion. It's the project of making his son a world champion that he's absolutely invested in. And hey, that's how he wants to spend his money. That's fine for him. So yeah, I don't see it happening. It's definitely not happening in the short term. Don't see it happening in the sort of medium term either. Maybe the 2026 rules reset will make things so much trickier for Aston that the Strolls do want to reassess. Obviously, we hope that happens without it having any impact on the wonderful team they've created there. But yeah, no, Aston, yeah, locked down on the Stroll front and putting their weight behind Fernando Alonso. Why wouldn't they want to have Alonso there? Look what he did in Shanghai with a car that, you know, is basically the fifth fastest. Well, it's been ahead of Mercedes the last couple of races, fourth or fifth fastest in Formula One at the moment. So, yeah, they made him feel loved. He wanted to stay. I think his options at Mercedes had dwindled anyway. Unimpressed by what had gone on in Australia, particularly sort of the suggestion around the engine being a factor in the Alonso clash with George Russell. But yeah, also he was very keen to point out that in Japan, you know, Aston Martin had been ahead of Mercedes. So that avenue seemed to have closed. The Red Bull avenue, he didn't, you know, the suggestion is that there wasn't the long-term offering he wanted. And so Aston Martin, it is. And, you know, from an Aston point of view, if my choice was, I don't know, well, if the choice was presented to me, you can have Fernando Alonso, but you also have to have Lance Stroll, I think I'd take that because Alonso's mega.
He certainly is. What a way to end the episode there. I was just thinking that if Lawrence Stroll wants to give me $1 million, then he can do, because he's thrown it away trying to get his son to be a world champion. In my humble opinion, I just can't see a world where Lance Stroll is ever going to be a Formula One world champion. I can't see it happen. So anyway, there we go. Well, Alex, no matter what happens, we know that silly season is going to be one of the silliest ones we've had for quite some time. Who's going to move to where and when will we find out? I guess we'll have to watch this space to see. Remember to head over to autosport.com to read the full article written by Alex, and be sure to let us know the comments of where you think some of the drivers will go. Don't forget, if you've liked what you've listened to, you can follow the podcast, get all the updates and notifications, and stay up to date with all things Formula One. Until next time, thanks for listening.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.